This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. A trip to Southern California to announce a basketball game gave me the opportunity to catch up to a real trailblazer and get a glimpse into a portion of World War II history that has often gone unrecognized. It has been a fascinating discussion with Robert Hammond, a corpsman serving with the all-black Mumford Point Marines during World War II. He would end up spending some time on Guam, but even there in a war zone could not escape some of the prejudice prevalent at the time.
Later on, we had two black doctors. One was a Lieutenant J.G., another one was a full lieutenant. Alvin Lawrence was a lieutenant. He was from Chicago. C.J. Jones from New York, from Brooklyn, he was Lieutenant J.G. They had some stories. I wish they were alive because they told me what they were up against as officers. A lot of the white sailors and Marines wouldn't salute them. And Dr. Jones went and put his hat on a post and told this Marine, if you can't salute me, you salute that hat. But he went through a lot. But if somebody, and he was a surgeon, and he treated a lot of those guys. And one of the things that they did, they carried segregation too far. They segregated blood. 1X for white, 2X for black, 3X for Mexican, 4X for Native American on the bottles. Wow. When blood is only A, B, and O, you know. And one time in surgery, I went and got, they were operating on this white guy. They needed blood, and they told me to go down and bring back some A blood. I brought back a bottle of A blood. I didn't know nothing about these X's, and it had two X's on it. And I handed it to the nurse. She dropped it on the floor, broke it. And the doctor there operated, what did you drop that for? And she said, we can't give him, use the N-word, blood. And that doctor said, listen, blood is blood. I wanted A blood. Give it to him. I don't care what the X's are. It doesn't mean a damn thing. So in the meantime, you had a hematologist named Charles Drew, Dr. Charles Drew, who invented blood plasma. The United States wouldn't use its plasma, so he took it to England. And when Hitler was bombing England, 1945, tearing it up, there was a shortage of blood. The Americans wanted to know, you have a shortage of blood over here? He said, no, we use Dr. Drew's blood plasma. And they said, oh, we can't use that. It's crystal. We can't segregate it. And they laughed at the American doctors for that. See? And then they started using it. And right then and there, they start using this plasma, and they took the X's off those bottles. And then Roosevelt died after that. When Roosevelt died and Harry Truman got in there, all sorts of things were happening in the armed forces, black troops, the army. You had Camp Van Dorn. You had Fort Bliss, riots. You had Port Chicago, and there was one up, Shoemaker, it was one up there. Tuskegee Airmen, there's one in Louisiana. All these broke out, and it started affecting the war effort. And Harry Truman says, we're not going to have none of that. We're going to integrate the whole thing. And I don't care if those Southern colonels and generals object to it. They could get the hell out. That's what they could do. So the whole thing got integrated in 48. Right. And all that stuff stopped. My learning from being in the Marine Corps, a lot of those guys distinguished themselves. A few of them got, under Clinton, Congressional Medal of Honor. Some of them were dead. I think three of them were living. I didn't get anything.
But one thing you did get recently with a lot of your fellow Mumford Point veterans was the Congressional Gold Medal. To have that happen so long after the fact, more than 65 years after World War II, what did that mean to you? Was it better late than never?
At my age now, and with the experiences that I had in the Navy and Marine Corps, I knew the Golden 13. Matter of fact, George C. Cooper, one of them, was my boss in Dayton, Ohio, when I was the director of health there. And my whole career was centered around my corpsman activities in the Marine Corps and Navy, because I didn't want to do corrective medicine. I wanted to do preventative medicine. So I got into the environmental health aspect of it and followed that, public health. And that was my career. I was able to do a lot of things, especially here. I became the chief of environmental health for a county in Los Angeles, director of health in Dayton, Ohio. So my background was very based upon what I had learned in the Marine Corps and the kinds of things that I did. I used to be the suture man. I could sew a guy up. I mean, really sew him up. And some of these Mumford Pointers, even today, when they see me, they call me the devil doc. They said, see that hand, you sewed it up. And it was perfect. Dr. Jones used to say, who did this? I said, I did. He says, you need to be a surgeon. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep people from getting sick. They're not going to have any wars when I come out of here. So I was very grateful to have that kind of experience. I mean, racism, Jim Crowism, I broke down a lot of those barriers.
So you can see the value of your experience and what it led to later on in your life, but I imagine it was still really satisfying to be there with all these other veterans who were mistreated but still served their country, that put their lives on the line, and to have the Congress of the United States hand you these big heavy medals and say, you know what, you're special. What was that like for you?
Well, I felt very proud of that because it made me feel that I'm 100% American, and I remember when we went to the memorializing of the Battle of Iwo Jima at Arlington Cemetery, President Clinton was there, and we were there, and he mentioned, he said, those men over there are members of the Double V. And we all laughed and did that to him. He knew what it was. He said they had two wars to fight, one at abroad and one at home, and they won both of them. Then that made me feel proud. And to get that Congressional Gold Medal made me even feel prouder, because it brought back some pleasant memories, like at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. When I was there, we were all lined up outside for the president. Harry Truman came to visit the hospital. And we were at Captain's Muster there. And he came down, came right over to me. He says, boy, he said, son, you're looking good. And he straightened my tie and shook hands with me. And he kept on going with his big hat. President of the United States. Clinton was the second president that I met. And I hope next year I'm supposed to be going to meet Barack Obama. So all of these things turn to, you know, being a citizen of being born in this country. And I say, now, sometimes I say, now, who do I really belong to? You know, I'm not going to say I belong to this group. I belong to that group. I belong to all of them. So that makes me 100% American with no hyphens.
Amen. That's a great way to say it. And, you know, as we get short on time in the interview here, I'm just curious, when you interact with people, because I can tell you're still very active for your age and you're not trying to slow down at all. So I'm sure you come in contact a lot with younger people who weren't alive when all of this was going on, who probably have no idea what you and those guys endured to create the opportunities that exist today. So what are the things that you want young people today in America to understand about not only the price that's been paid for their freedom, but in your case, the suffering, the endurance that had to take place to create some semblance of equality in our country?
I've been doing a lot along those lines because I belong to Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and I've been a member of that for 60 some odd years, about 63 years now. And every year, last year we had our 19th youth conference at USC. We had 1,000 people there. We had about 600 boys. And I have a health component in that, and then I have another component of talking to these boys in terms of their future. Like when I grew up, Our future was to the stars. I remember Charlie Bolden got his picture, General. See, he was a personal friend of mine, and one day he was just a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. I said, Charles, what's your aspiration? He says, you know, I don't know. He said, I'm going to the stars. I said, you want to know something? You are. That's the key to it. My mother said, hitch your wagon to a star. And I told him, hitch it. And he went there, too. So I tell those boys that story about him. And I say, look, your future is in your hands. Stay out of these gangs. Go to school. Learn the English language and speak it right. Get rid of that slang. Pull your pants up. I said, too many of you young guys are going to jail, which is true. Yeah. And we try to keep them out. We figure if we, our fraternity, if we could save 2 out of 10, we're doing a lot. And we save quite a few boys. And I tell them all, the best way to get your education, get it like I did. I went in the service. I came out with the GI Bill. That's another story of segregation, because we saved the historical black colleges, the black servicemen, by using the GI Bill to go to those schools. And those schools became famous. And I tell them, why don't you follow the basic principles that are handed down to you? Study Martin Luther King. He's a good role model for you. I said, and you guys won't have to go through all the mess I did. You won't have to, because people did it for you. And you better live up to it. And I tell them, I said, make me proud of you. You don't have to be proud of me. You make me proud of you.
I just want to make sure that I say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for being willing to tell us about some of those difficult times and for sharing your story with us. Is there anything else that you want people to know?
Yes, that I'm not the only one. There are many others like me that have served this country, not only in World War II, but in the other wars. They serve in the service, they serve in Congress, they serve in cities, they serve in counties, and they're out there doing the kind of work that makes them true Americans. They're out here helping people to get better, and I think that's the key to everything.
Well, you have certainly given us a better understanding of what it was like to travel your path as a corpsman in a then segregated military in World War II. You talked about having to fight two wars. And we ended up hearing a lot more about the one at home than the one abroad. We're out of time, but I'm so glad you survived them both and could share that story with us today. That is Robert Hammond of Long Beach, California. You can find photos of this distinguished gentleman by browsing the photo galleries on Facebook. All you have to do is search for Hometown Heroes Radio. We're out of time on the program this time around. Hope you'll join us again next time, too. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.